You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Jonathan Capehart here today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. Tim Gunn is a man of many talents, but he's probably best known as co-host and style mentor of Project Runway, now in its seventh season. He's also, and get ready for this resume, chief creative officer of Liz Claiborne, Inc., honorary chair of fashion design at Parsons School of Design, where he served on the administration and faculty, retooling and reinvigorating the curriculum for the 21st century. He's offered his expert advice to Real Women on Tim Gunn's Guide to Style, and is the author of Tim Gunn, a guide... Excuse me, I'm telling you, this is a lot. A Guide to Quality, Taste, and Style, published by Abrams Image, and the forthcoming book, Gunn's Golden Rules. And he's even appeared as a superhero in the Marvel comic Models, Inc. And, of course, he's done all of these things with impeccable style. You should see him sitting across from me. And I'm very pleased to welcome him to the Leonard Lopate Show. Great to see you again, Tim.
Jonathan, it's wonderful to be with you. And speaking of style, you're not doing so bad yourself.
Can I get this on my resume? It's like a stamp of approval. Thank you, Tim. So were you involved with Project Runway from the very start?
I was involved from its very inception, yes, initially as a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I first became involved with the show, my role in the show was in no one's vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And it really evolved, and I think out of a fear that the producers shared that Heidi Klum would deliver the challenge, the designers would go into the workroom, the design work would come back onto the runway on models, and no one would speak.
Mm-hmm.
So by sending me into the workroom to probe and to query, you knew that there would be some dialogue.
Now, did you create the role, or did our buddy Desiree Gruber say, hey, Tim, you...
Well, the producers, including Desiree, yeah. Asked me whether I would be interested in this role, and my first response was, do I have to live with the designers? And when I learned that I didn't, it was a huge relief.
Uh-huh.
But of course, then it was an issue of B-roll for Bravo and various other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I will also share with you, though, the entire time that we were taping season one, I never dreamed I'd actually be in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew that I was being taped, but I thought as long as the producers have me speaking, no one needs to hear my voice, and no one needs to see me.
I've watched the show, and one of my favorite things of the show is when you walk into the room and you say, designers.
Designers.
If you didn't speak, I mean, there would be a big hole in the show.
Well, right? It's a hole no one would even know about, though. So, I mean, that's why no one's more surprised by the success of the show than I am.
I was going to ask, did you think it would be so successful?
Never. I mean, taping season one, I thought, well, this will be good cocktail party talk, and we'll move on to something else. I never dreamed that it would be a success at all.
Mm-hmm. And so this is the seventh season.
Yes.
And have the designers gotten better as the seasons have progressed?
Most definitely, and I know precisely why. Designers see this, designers who have limited exposure at the moment see the show as a great public relations vehicle for their brand.
Mm-hmm.
So they really want to come on, show the world what they can do, and hopefully get some financial backing and support out of this.
And these are folks who come from all over the country. It's just not, you know, hipsters from 7th Avenue.
No, all over the country.
Now, what's happened with some of the winners? What have they gone on to do?
Well, I have to tell you, Jonathan, the success of each of the designers on the show is in direct correlation to their resources and their ambitions. I want to cite Chloe Dow, for instance,
mm-hmm.
who's in Houston, Texas. She won season two. And Chloe debated with herself, should I move to New York? Should I make this brand bigger? How ambitious do I really want to be? She loves her life in Houston. Her family's there. Her life is there.
Mm-hmm.
And she has created a larger brand in Houston. And her trips to the East Coast involve QVC and,
mm-hmm.
and a product that she's doing for QVC. So she's enjoying a huge amount of success. Is she at Macy's or Saks Fifth Avenue or Nordstrom or Neiman's? No, it's not that she even wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, so we could talk the entire time about Project Runway.
We could.
But you've got a book. Well, actually, you have two books. And before we went on, we talked about the current book, A Guide to Quality, Taste, and Style.
Yes.
I'm sorry, it's Tim Gunn.
Well, no,
A Guide to Quality, Taste, and Style. And then there's Gunn's Golden Rules.
Which is coming out in September.
Right. Now, you said that, well, why don't you talk about the difference between writing quality taste and style, and Gunn's Golden Rules.
Well, Jonathan, I have to tell you, I mean, I write all the time, and I love writing, and I have such huge respect for the English language. Well, all languages, but at least English is my own. And I write a lot. And when I was presented with the task of writing A Guide to Quality, Taste, and Style by Abrams Imprint, I was enthusiastic when I launched out writing, and with each successive day and week and month, it became more difficult a task, and I felt like I was close to a psychotic breakdown.
But why? Well, why?
Well, I have to tell you, I really struggled with the content of the book, and I'm sure there are people who are listening thinking, God, it was a fashion book. What kind of struggle could there be? Well, the struggle was that this book steps up and away from similar kinds of books that are about self-help or makeovers, because I'm not someone who offers up prescriptions. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fashion Svengali. I'm much more of a fashion therapist. So I struggled with how to put it all together, and in the end decided it has to be about the reader. It has to be personalized, really, for that reader, so that anyone picking up the book, and you and I talked about men as well. I mean,
right.
There's information in the book that's just as valuable for men. Is it largely about women? Yes. But it's a matter of being able to project yourself into it and get information out of it.
Well, talk about three sort of rules that come out of this book that, as you said, you know, they're gender neutral.
Well, know who you are and how you want to present yourself to the world, because it's the semiotics of fashion. The clothes we wear send a message about how the world perceives us, like it or not. So how do you want the world to perceive you? And how accurately or how well are you portraying that person?
Are you Mame Dennis or are you Agnes Gooch?
Exactly, exactly.
But why should someone view that as important? Because a lot of people look at this and say, oh, it's just a fashion book. I'm not a fashion person,
well,
so why is this even relevant to me?
I have to tell you, Jonathan, it doesn't. One can say that. My message is, another rule is, accept responsibility for how you present yourself to the world. If you want to present yourself to the world as an unmade bed, just accept responsibility for it. Don't play a victim. Don't do that at all. And I really believe in that. That's why when I had the Bravo show, Tim Gunn's Guide to Style, mm-hmm. It was not an intervention. These women self-declared that they were in a fashion rut and they needed help. And I put them through, along with my co-host, initially Veronica Webb, and then the absolutely divine Greta Monahan. We gave them information. We gave them knowledge that was about them specifically. Each mm-hmm. show had very different content. So people would ask, well, how would you feel if they reverted back to who they were before? I'd be fine about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very matter-of-fact about that, because they know better.
Mm-hmm.
So they know what they can do. They know that they can do it on their own because they did it on the show. So it's a decision that they make. Accept responsibility for how you present yourself to the world.
Now, okay, so if you want to present yourself as an unmade bed, that's on you. But what happens? Should someone tone it down if you...
Well, it depends upon who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really does. People frequently show me photographs of how people are dressing and ask me to critique it, and I respond by asking questions. I always have a Socratic approach to almost everything. Who is this person? What do they do? Because if the person's dressed like a circus clown, maybe they are. You know? You don't know.
I know. It's fantastic. I have to say, I'm Jonathan Capehart in today for Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm speaking with Tim Gunn. Y'all know who he is, so let's keep going. So there are so many choices out there. Fashion trends change
yes,
all the time.
Tons.
Do you find that women don't always know where to turn?
They frequently don't. And they listen to friends, they take the fashion magazines' directions literally, And I am so loath to ever talk about trends, except to say the following. The trend is only good if it works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to try it on. You need to look at yourself critically and analytically. It's very, very important. Things like that are as basic as color and patterns.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. I mean, color all depends upon your own skin color and how does that color look with you. Pattern and print really is a matter of size and scale, also having to do with you and your own figure. I spent a lot of time on the road with our Liz Claiborne Incorporated brands doing fashion shows. In fact, I just came back from Houston. I was in Scottsdale the weekend before. I love them. I mm-hmm. really love them because they're about education. It's not parading clothes down a runway and saying, here, buy these things. It's about, let's look at each look. Why does it work for this person? What if you're petite? Can you do this? Probably not. Pear shapes, broader mm-hmm. shoulders versus hips. We go through it all.
So a big problem is that women don't see who they are.
Precisely.
Their assets.
Precisely.
So how do you teach that?
Well, first of all, I hope that my book helps with that. I hope that my book helps people detach themselves mentally and have a kind of out-of-body experience looking at themselves. On Guide to Style, we did it by taking 25 measurements and creating a computer image of the individual that mm-hmm. was absolutely accurate, and it was life-size. It was a huge plasma screen television. And she would always be shocked. And you know what she would be shocked about, Jonathan? She looks better than she thinks she does.
Mm.
Better.
So I think you have here in the book that, or no, you know what? I think that might be Raquel Welch. Says in her book that no woman likes the way she looks.
If I were Raquel Welch, I'd be a very happy camper.
You saw her in the green room.
She is breathtaking. Breathtaking.
I'm going to ask her if she's read any of your books. Now, we've talked a lot about A Guide to Quality, Taste, and Style, which was almost a mental breakdown for you. But then you said Guns, Golden Rules
was liberating. Absolutely.
How?
Liberating.
Why? What was the difference?
It was a very purging and cathartic experience. On the one hand, I mean, it is a kind of morality tale, in a manner of speaking, using personal anecdotes. Many. In fact, the Simon & Schuster legal department has spent a good deal of time with this book. but it's not a rant. I'm not railing at the world. I wrote it as though I were sitting in my office mentoring students.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate the world with respect and responsibility? Respect for yourself and for your fellow man, and responsibility to yourself and for your fellow man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a lot of information to impart. And if there's one theme throughout the book, it's the following. Take the high road. No matter what. And in these days of the promotion and the proliferation of bad behavior, mm-hmm. which I find completely repugnant, take the high road.
All right. Give me – what's the one thing that's happened – because you said behavior that's repugnant. What's the one repugnant thing that's happened that's just sent you over the deep end?
Well, personally or just in general?
Or just in fitting with what you were saying.
Well, owing to the fact that I take the high road, I avoid situations or I neutralize situations that are potentially incendiary mm-hmm. by taking the high road. It could have happened to me last night leaving the subway.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I will tell you, I backed down the stairs back into the subway and took another exit because of this situation that was happening at the top of the stairs mm-hmm. with a woman who wasn't moving.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got up the other stairs and I was walking up the sidewalk past this entrance, she and another woman were in a fist fight.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's when you see something that is incendiary or potentially incendiary, walk away from it. Don't engage in it.
So back to what you talking with your students on Project Runway. You do a great job offering, you know, creative criticism and you're nurturing talent. Is that something you learned from all your years at Parsons?
Oh, absolutely. It definitely came from teaching and from having a lot of experiences that I didn't want to repeat,
mm-hmm.
Having to do with being overly blunt to a student, not remotely intending to hurt someone's feelings, and then asking myself, all right, how do I present the same information in a way that doesn't cause the student to shut down or discredit me and my voice, and then discredit things that really are useful and are helpful? And one thing that I absolutely don't believe in doing, it's talking to people about things that they can't change. It's not useful.
Such as?
Well, let's use Project Runway as an example. Once we're back from mood, and if a designer is sitting with a huge pile of red charmeuse, what's the use in saying, you shouldn't have bought this fabric? They did. So right. It's make it work time.
Right. And that's another one of your signature sayings. Now, I want to talk about Washington.
Yes.
Because in your book, Quality, Taste, and Style, you say, and I totally agree with this sentence, quote, "I love my hometown, Washington, but let's be honest, with the exception of the dazzling Kennedy years, Washington is a fashion desert."
Well, and Jonathan, the book was written in 2006. I would now say the Obamas have rescued Washington. But, and I have to add, too, the Kennedy years were wonderful, but Jackie Kennedy was like a rare hothouse flower. You would put her under a bell jar. Michelle Obama is the opposite. She is so accessible. Her clothing is... She wears clothes that real people can wear.
J. Crew.
Yeah, I mean, she's not wearing European designer clothes that are completely out of sight and off limits for most people. So it's a whole new dazzling administration and one that I couldn't be happier about.
Well, the First Lady mixes it up. She has high and low.
She does all the time.
Expensive and accessible. But do you think, yes, the Obamas are glamorous and young, but what I'm seeing also is that the people that they're bringing to Washington into the administration are also as fabulous and chic and well put together as they are.
I agree.
Which, when was the last time you were home down in Washington?
I was in Washington on July 24th to have lunch at the White House.
Oh.
How about that little bit of
in the White
Place
House,
dropping
in the White House mess or in the private quarters?
No, in the state dining room.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, hello.
It was it was fabulous. And I was at Mrs. Obama's table.
Very nice.
I'm proud to say it was a luncheon for the National Design Awards. The First Lady is the patron of the National Design Awards.
And was that your first time meeting her?
Yes.
And so you were pleasantly surprised.
I went starry-eyed. I mean, I went prepared to be in a puddle. And what disarmed me truly was how user-friendly she is, what a natural conversational she is, how she has a way of putting you at ease in a nanosecond. She's fabulous.
So we are running out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I had a couple more questions.
Sure.
One, has Project Runway changed the way people think about design and about fashion, do you think, over the 7 seasons?
Well, yes. I mean, I hope so. Let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. Project Runway has made fashion very accessible. It's really ripped the veil of mystery off of it and said, this is what it is. And I've even had men say to me, you know, Project Runway has given me a vocabulary to shop. And it's I thought, what a great compliment.
And that leads to my last question, which is, you know, Project Runway is, you know, focused on women. So what about men? What's the one piece of fashion advice you would give men that they need to hear?
Fit. Most men's clothes are simply too big for them. It's the comfort trap. It's this desire, this need, this desire to feel that you can do anything. You can play a football game in your suit. Don't do that. Silhouette, proportion, and fit are critical for every individual, and for men, it's especially about fit. I mean, one of my refrains is, if you want to dress to feel as though you never got out of bed, don't.
Fantastic. I've been speaking with Tim Gunn, Project Runway's style mentor, creative director of Liz Claiborne, and now he's and we didn't even talk about this, hero of Marvel Comics, comic book,
well,
Models, Inc.
We did talk about it in a manner of speaking because I'm fighting crimes against fashion. At 56 years old, I'm a Marvel superhero. It's pretty fabulous.
It's fantastic. Too bad this isn't television because I could show everyone you in this. I think it's the Iron Man.
Well, yes. I possess no superpowers of my own, so I have to don the Iron Man suit. How lucky am I?
You have superpowers. Tim Gunn, thank you so much for joining us.
Jonathan,
today.
Thank you. And I only wish I could be here with you for Raquel Welch.
Oh, you can hang around. Why don't you hang around?
No, I wouldn't dream of it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.